then Rabbi Yehuda says, that's only true during the year. But if it's Hanukkah, where you're supposed to light outside, the owner of the fire is patur. That is the only place in the Mishnah where Hanukkah is discussed, some crazy little case. Hanukkah was very much de-emphasized. And again, some say because it was a dangerous holiday because of the Romans, and some say it was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's own disdain, the Chassam Sofer says, that the Chashmonaim took Malchus, which they shouldn't have, because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is from Beis David, and the Chashmonaim were a failed monarchy. Again, it is so amazing, if you just think about this, if you go through the entire Talmud, it's almost as if the Chachamim were living in a parallel universe. In the time of Hillel and Shammai, you have Yanai HaMelech and all of these Hasmoneans, and the Chachamim just keep away, just ignored them. They were a force for negativity, and the less we have to do with them, the better. Okay. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that historical background that I think is really very, very, very interesting. And two, as I say, Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2 gives you two different perspectives on the struggle. Military prowess versus willingness to give your life al Kiddush Hashem. It's very interesting. If you think about Holocaust commemorations, you find a very similar dichotomy. Historically, as you know, the Yom HaShoah is connected to the rising of the Warsaw Ghetto. And of course, that was a very heroic undertaking, absolutely, that deserves respect and commemoration. But you should also be aware, I'm sure many of you are aware, that there was a bit of debate on this issue, because by emphasizing the Warsaw Ghetto as the paradigm of Jewish heroism, there might be, again, I don't mean to take positions on this, but there might be the intimation that the Jews who passively went to their death like sheep to the slaughter, perhaps did not behave a proper way. In other words, the notion is there are many types of heroism. There is the heroism of fighting and risking your life, and there is the heroism of standing up al Kiddush Hashem and going to your death with dignity and preservation of respect and faith in Hashem. And these are different models of heroism, all of which are heroic, and all of which are deserving of being remembered. And this is exactly the dichotomy that appears in Maccabees 1 and Maccabees 2. Very, very fascinating how different historical writers, and we can talk about it as works of history because these are not holy works. These are not part of Kitzvei HaKodesh. So we can analyze it like any secular history, how the different authors took different fragments of a total truth and what they chose to emphasize and what they chose not to emphasize. Again, it's very, very fascinating. Okay. But now I want to focus on the part of the story that is most familiar to us, and that is the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos. Again, the Mishnah says almost nothing, but the Gemara says, my Hanukkah. Again, in the discussion of Shabbos candles, it moves to Hanukkah candles. This is Perek Bamem Adlikin. And it mentions that there are three different ways you can fulfill the mitzvah of Hanukkah. There is basic, there is mahadrin, that sounds like the restaurants in Israel, and then there's mahadrin min ha-mahadrin. Basic is quite surprising. If I want to fulfill, let's say I say, I'm not a tzaddik, I just want to be yotze. All you need is one candle every night. So if I have a family of 10 people, night one, I light one candle. And even night eight, one candle. One candle every night covers everybody in your family. That's to be yotzei. That's basic mitzvah. But then it says, mahadrin, if you want to do the mitzvah in a beautiful way, so then you should light one candle for every member of your family. Now, that's still nothing like we do it. That means if I have 10 people in my family, day one, night one, 10 candles, that's all. Night eight, 10 candles. That's mahadrin. But then we have super duper mahadrin. But if you want to be mahadrin min ha-mahadrin, so then you want to count according to the days, and that is the machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Hillel says, start with one and go up. Beis Shammai says, start with eight and go down. And of course, as is always the case, almost always the case, when there's a machlokes, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, we follow Beis Hillel. Now, there is a machlokes, Rishonim, and this is a machlokes, Ashkenazim and Sfardim. If you want to do the highest level, do you include the middle level? So, for example, if I have 10 people in my household, and I want to do the highest level, let's say on the last day of Hanukkah, do I light 8 candles, or do we light 80 candles? The shita of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, is if you want to light at the highest level of Minyan HaYamim, only one person should light. Because if there's 80 candles, you're not people who walk by aren't going to know what day it is. So that is the minhag of many Sfardim who follow the Mechaber, that only one menorah is lit. Because we want to do Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin. And if you're doing Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, you don't do Mahadrin. Because if you would do Mahadrin, it wouldn't be Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin anymore. Because the Yomim gets thrown off. But those of us who are Ashkenazim follow the Pesach of the Ramah. And again, it's based on earlier Rishonim. And the Ramah basically says that Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin also includes Mahadrin. And therefore, there should be a menorah for all of the B'nai Bayit, with the possible exception, even that's a machlokes, of husband and wife. Again, many say that even like the Ramah, husband and wife only have one menorah, because ishto kagufo. On the other hand, others say even husband and wife should have separate menorahs. Okay, that's a machlokes. Now, this is already a very unusual mitzvah for Hanukkah, that we say not only mahadrin, now again, heder mitzvah, to do a mitzvah in a beautiful way is, of course, every mitzvah is that way. Zeh keli v'yanveyu, this is my God and I will glorify him, that one should always try to do mitzvot in a beautiful way. But I can prove to you, arithmetically, that the various options given for Hanukkah lighting cannot be because of the general rule of heder mitzvah. And the proof is this. The Gemara in Bava Kamma says, how much extra money do you have to add on to your price for heder mitzvah? Let's take an esrog. If I could get a kosher esrog for X amount of money. Thank you. Okay. If I could get a kosher esrog for X amount of money, X amount of shekel or dollars, how much extra do I have to pay for mehudar to make it more beautiful? So the Gemara says, I don't have to add more than 50%. So that would mean if I could get a kosher esrog for $30, this really dates me, I think, I wouldn't have to add more than $15, meaning $45. I wouldn't have to spend $60. Now, obviously, if the basic mitzvah is one candle and I make it 8, candles maybe aren't expensive, but whatever it is, that's much more than 50%. That is 800%, and over the days as well, right? So therefore, the idea of Mahadrin is not simply the generic law of heder mitzvah, but rather it's a unique principle for Hanukkah, that Hanukkah, it is part of the mitzvah itself to do it behidur. In other words, it's not the same as a nice lulav, although a nice esrog might also be pre-Eitz Hadar. So why is that so? What is the shaychut between Hidur and Hanukkah? So I'm going to give you two answers. One is from the Chidushei Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, and the other is from a Litvisha Darshan, the Kehelas Yitzchak of the 19th century. And I think in a broader perspective, we get two ideas of Hanukkah emerging from it. The Chidushei Harim, the first Ger Rebbe, answers this kasha with another kasha. And this is a kasha all the Rishonim ask. If you focus on the miracle of the oil for a moment, because once we're in the Gemara does shift the emphasis to the Pach HaShemen, right? Remember, so we're switching emphasis over here, although the older themes get preserved. That's why, by the way, the Al HaNisim only mentions the war. The Al HaNisim is very old. The Al HaNisim is from the Zaman of the Chashmonaim itself. It is like finding a fly trapped in amber. You are actually finding a contemporaneous account of what the miracle is. That's very, very significant. But once we're into the Gemara, we are focusing on the Pach HaShemen. There's no question about that. So people ask the question. The Rishonim ask the question. There is a print. What happened? They had enough oil, pure oil, to light for one day, but all the other oil was Tameh. Well, the halacha is that although an individual person, I cannot bring Tameh things as a korban, but when you have a korban tzibor, a communal offering, this is the principle called Tuma Hutra B'tzibor. The laws of impurity in the Beit HaMikdash are suspended when it is a communal need. This is a halacha. Now, lighting the menorah every day in the Beis HaMikdash, every day in the Beis HaMikdash, was a korban tzibor. It was not an individual thing. We were doing it on behalf of the Kohen was doing it on behalf of Am Yisrael. On behalf of Am Yisrael. If that is the case, why did Hashem have to do a miracle at all? Day one, they light with pure oil. And day two, they'll light with impure oil. And day three, until they have enough time to get pure oil. The whole miracle was superfluous. It's an unnecessary miracle. Chidush HaRim says, Hashem showed his love for us by giving us the ability to do a mitzvah in the most beautiful way possible, even though it was not technically necessary. In other words, even if Tumah Hutra V'tzibur, it is a hidur mitzvah to use pure oil. Hashem wanted us to do the mitzvah behidur. So if the whole miracle of Chanukah is Hashem wanted to enable us to do the mitzvah behidur, so we reciprocate. We do the mitzvah behidur. The miracle of Chanukah was a hidur mitzvah miracle. The Chiddush HaRim goes on and says, in many, many ways, this shows Hashem's love more than things that are maybe more important. For example, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu prevents us from being destroyed, even though that's very important, but kind of, he has to do that, you know. He made promises, you know. What do they say? They say, what's the German, the Jewish German poet? Heinrich Heine, as I pronounce him. He was an apikaris. I shouldn't even be quote. Yeah, Heine. He was a kifer and he was not good. But his last words in his deathbed, somebody said he should do tshuva or something. So he said, God will forgive me. That's his business. That's his job. You know, okay. Excuse me for even quoting that. But the point basically is that if Hashem doesn't let us die, that does not yet show a depth of love. Because even if, you know, we're not in God's good graces, you know, he'll save us in the merit of the others or whatever it is. But if Hashem does something he doesn't have to do that we could live without, it's luxury. It's like the difference between giving somebody some bread and water so they don't drop dead and making somebody like a wonderful roast or a pie or something. You didn't have to do it. He didn't need it. But by giving them more than they need, that becomes an act of love and friendship and care. And the Chiddush HaRim says, the whole miracle of Hanukkah in that way was a superfluous, unnecessary miracle so we could serve Hashem in a beautiful way, so we reciprocate. That is the Chiddush HaRim's answer of why we have levels of Mahadrin for Ner Hanukkah. Now the Koheles Yitzchak gives another teretz, and he raises an interesting question. It's a little technical, but not too much so. The one jar of oil, all the oil was Tameh, but there was one jar of oil that was sealed with the Chotam of the Kohen Gadol that had not been tampered with, and that oil was kosher. Now the question is, why is there the seal of the Kohen Gadol? Kohen Gadol was not the custodian of the oil. Well, the answer is, there was a daily meal offering that the Kohen Gadol had to bring from his own property in the morning and in the afternoon. And this was called Chavitei Kohen Gadol. And we have to assume this was not a jar of menorah oil. This was a jar of mincha oil that you mix with the flour. But that raises a real halachic problem, because the quality of oil that you need for menorah is grade A, with no sediment or cloudiness. But the oil that you use for mincha can be grade B, that is pressed with pieces of olive in it. So grade B oil is not kosher for the menorah. So how could we even use that jar of oil if it's mincha oil? Answer, it must have been that the anonymous Kohen Gadol, maybe it was Matisyahu himself, wanted to bring his meal offering with Hidr Mitzvah. So he packed grade A oil for mincha, which enabled us to have one day of oil, which means the following. If we would not have had that pure oil for day one, there would have been no miracle, because what Hashem did is Hashem caused that pure oil to keep on burning. If there wouldn't have been that pure oil, there wouldn't have been a miracle. So why was there a miracle? Only because the Kohen Gadol did Hidr Mitzvah. And therefore, we celebrate by Hidr Mitzvah. So if you look at these two answers, again, they're technical answers, but they do emphasize two different facets. The Chidushei Harim is emphasizing the menorah as symbolic of the blessings that Hashem gives us. Hashem gives us so much kindness, so much love, so much goodness, more than we deserve and more than we even need for survival. And therefore we thank Him by doing mitzvahs beautifully, because He gave us a miracle of Hidr that He didn't have to do to show His love and affection for Am Yisrael. And therefore when I look at the menorah, I see the light of the Shekhinah illuminating the world and illuminating our hearts. The Kehilas Yitzchak is saying another point, that the miracle of Hanukkah shows the devotion and care of Am Yisrael in serving Hashem. That here you have a person at times of great persecution who still thought not only of doing a mitzvah in a minimal way, but of doing a mitzvah going beyond the law, even in times of stress. And therefore, the menorah is not only the light of the Shekhinah, but it's the radiance of our own neshamot, as it says, Ner Hashem, Nishmat Adam. So when you look at the Hanukkah lights, you're seeing a double reflection. You're seeing the light of Hashem, and you're seeing the light of your neshama. And therefore, it is both a celebration, just as the Gemara in Brachos says, we wear tefillin and Hashem wears tefillin. In our tefillin is a celebration of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the unity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in Hashem's tefillin, Mi ki amcha Yisrael goyachot be'oretz. Right? That's Hashem's tefillin. And so the lights of Hanukkah are the Shekhinah that comes into the world, as well as the radiance that exists within our neshama. So from these technical answers, you see these two perspectives and the like. I should mention as well that it is brought down in Sforim, going with the idea that the lights represent the lights of the Shekhinah. The total number of candles we light during Hanukkah, not counting the Shamash, is 36 candles. If you add 1 to 8, you have 36 candles. And it mentions that there were 36 hours of the first three days of creation where there was a divine light, because the sun was not created till the fourth day. So for Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, the Yom, the 12 hours of Yom, were manifested and expressed through the Or HaGanuz, through the Or of the Shekhinah, that then became Ganuz. So it is brought down in Sifrei Kabbalah that the 36 Neros of Hanukkah bring back into the world the 36 hours of the hidden light that existed for the first three days of creation. That is why many have a minhag to sit by the lights and to actually watch. Of course, you're not allowed to read by the lights. That's why we have Shamash and the like. But there is the union of being mistakel b'neiros. You find that particularly among Hasidim and among Hasidish Rebbes, certainly, they literally stare at the lights because it is the aura of the Shekhinah that comes in. Okay. Now, let's go a little further. And once we reach the level of Mahadrin, Min HaMahadrin, We then have the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, where Beis Shammai says 8 and you go down, and Beis Hillel says 1 and you go up. The Gemara then proceeds to give us 2 explanations for the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The first explanation that it gives seems to be a tautology. It seems to be nothing more than restating what they're arguing about. And that is, Beis Hillel says you go up because you're looking at the days as they have passed, or that you're right. So on the first day, there's been one day of miracle, or there is one day of miracle. By the 8th day, there have been, including last day, 8 days. In other words, you're looking at the past. And Beis Shammai says you're looking at what's coming down the pike. So on the first day, there will be 8 days of Nes. On the last day, there's only going to be 1 day of Nes. But that doesn't really explain anything. That just says what they say. So I saw there's a very interesting essay by the very, very great Talmud Chacham, Rav Shlomo Yosef Stevin, who was he lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Rav in Russia, but he really had many, many lives. He was a Gadol B'Torah. He was a Chabad Chassid. He was a Mizrahi Zionist. He was very good friends with the Brisker Rav and Rav Kook, all sorts of Gedolim who you might not assume would be that connected to each other. But Rav Zevin managed to build many, many bridges. And he was also, I say, the founding editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. He wrote many, many essays in a very beautiful modern Hebrew. And in one of his essays, he discusses an approach to how you analyze Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel generally. And all of us know that usually Beit Hillel is lenient and Beit Shammai is strict. But leniency and strictness don't seem to explain Hanukkah. Start with 8 or start with 1. What does that have to do with being machmir and nekel? So Rav Zevin says perhaps we can generalize and go into a deeper insight. That is, Beis Shammai is an idealist. He looks at the potentialities that exist in the world. Ideally, the world should be run with midas hadin. And therefore, Beis Shammai is machmir because he looks at the world the way Hashem intended to create it, the way it should be. He looks at koach and not poel. He looks at potentiality and not actualization. That's why he's machmir. Beis Hillel looks at the imperfect actualization of the potential. And in this imperfect world where we're so weak, we are mako because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to be mishtatef, rachamim, and din. Now, if you understand the idea that Beis Shammai is the idealist, and Beis Hillel is the realist, so to speak, this actually explains the miracle. Oh, thank you. This actually explains the miracle of Hanukkah itself, this machlokas. Because if you're looking at potential, day one, Hashem put 8 days of koach in the oil. By day 8, there's only 1 day of koach in the oil. So Beis Shammai, who looks at koach and not poel, will go down because the koach diminished with the passage of time. Beis Hillel, who looks at actualization, the actualization is based on what we perceive. Day 1, we didn't perceive 8 days of miracle, right? So Rav Zevin quite ingeniously links the Chumrah and the Kula theme with the potential and the actualization theme, and therefore that is how he does the first explanation of the Gemara. All right. But then the Gemara gives a second explanation. And here, Beis Hillel is very easy to understand. Beis Hillel says you go up because Malin Bakodesh. You go up in holiness. That sounds simple. Beis Shammai says we compare it to the Korbanot of Sukkos. Now, I already told you historically what that would mean, but now I want to share with you a thought of the Sfas Emes. The big problem is, what on earth is the connection between Hanukkah lighting and the Korbanos of Sukkos? Again, I gave you a historical explanation. The Sfas Emes wants to understand it in a more spiritual sense. And here is what the Sfas Emes says. We know, of course, that the total number of parim that were brought on Sukkot are 70. And the Gemara itself says that they represent the 70 nations of the world. And since as we approach Geula, as we approach Mashiach, their power will get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. We bring the korbanot to be machlish, the koach of the umot that are trying to destroy us, physically and spiritually. And if you ask the question, how can we talk about the umos getting weaker and weaker as we approach Mashiach, when unfortunately, l'tzareinu hagadol, we have the rise of ISIS and terrorism and Islamic fundamentalism and all sorts of threats of violence in which the whole world is being held hostage, and we, of course, in Eretz Israel, bear such a brunt of suffering. It's hard to understand, but the way the Svarim describe it, again, it's hard to understand, is these are the final death throes before the coming of Mashiach, meaning just as before a candle goes out, there's a last burst of energy. Before a person dies, there's a last gasp of strength. So too, this is a, again, it has real repercussions for us, but this is a hiccup, so to speak. This is the last stand before the evil collapses. And we're zocha tegula, again, may it be b'mehera v'yameinu in that way. But therefore, that is the parei hachag. The parei hachag represent the kiloyon hara, the diminution of evil through these korbanos and the like. So, based on this, the Sfas Emes suggests that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are both focusing on the neirot as a metaphor for our neshama, and the Hadlakas Ner of Hanukkah is a symbolic way of perfecting ourselves, because we can't really destroy the evil out there until we destroy the evil within us. But the Machlokas is, how do you do it? Beis Shammai views fire through the metaphor of that which burns away the bad. Beis Shammai says, take your negative qualities and surgically burn them away, one by one, to transcend egotism, anger, hatred, laziness, selfishness. So Beis Shammai's type of tshuva, which is called Sur Meira, the hopeful trajectory would be, you have less to do. I start off with eight things to get rid of. Eight. In other words, if you look at fire as that which is Soref Umechaleh, and you're, which is like the Parei Hachag, that's his comparison, just like the Parei Hachag represents the Bechitut of evil, so the Neros of Hanukkah is Soref Umechaleh, the Ra within me. And therefore I move through a Poches V'Holeh. But Beis Hillel says, that doesn't really work for us. Because it might be true that in an ideal world, see, even this is focusing on the ideal versus the practical. In an ideal world, I should be able to look at myself honestly and identify my pagamim, my chesronot, my averot, and simply work on myself. In reality, it often works the other way around. We get depressed. We get despondent. We get hopeless. And therefore, Beis Hillel says, the imagery of Ner as that which is Metaken is not the Ner that burns away your flaws, but the Ner that increases your goodness. Meaning, you do tshuva by building the positive aspects of your personality. And by building the positives within yourself, the dark corners automatically get dispelled, because or is docha es achoshech. And therefore, Beis Shammai views the neirot as that which burns and destroys, and that's the connection to the Parei Hachag. Beis Hillel views the ner as that which illuminates and warms, and this is the tshuva of Sur Meira versus the tshuva of Aseh Tov. Perhaps this might be Musar versus Chassidus. Again, this is a great simplification. So it turns out that the Shita of Musar is following Beis Shammai, which would raise some halachic problems. But at least from the Sfas Emes's perspective, this tshuva comes not so much by focusing on our failings and our shortcomings, but by focusing on our strengths and building those strengths. And as we build the strengths, the choshech is nistalek by itself, because you turn on the lights, there's going to be less choshech. So there are tremendous, tremendous lessons here. Let me just end with one final point, and that is I have to go back to history a little bit, because the history is very illuminating. We tend to think, and I have to admit that the Rambam seems to describe it this way, that the reclaiming of the Beit HaMikdash and the lighting of the menorah was the culmination of the military victory, meaning we've ended the war with the Yevanim. In point of fact, that is not at all true. In point of fact, the war against the Yevanim lasted for more than 25 years until Shimon was able to proclaim himself, or was proclaimed, Nisi Yisrael. The miracle of the Pach HaShemen did not occur at the end of the struggle. The miracle of the Pach HaShemen occurred towards the beginning of the struggle. Now, granted, it was a tremendously important milestone, regaining the Beit HaMikdash. But we regained the Beit HaMikdash, and we're still in the middle of a devastating war that will last more than 25 years. Now, if you think about this, it is actually much more meaningful that the nes of the Pach HaShemen occurred then. Because here you have a small group of Jews under Matisyahu, and she's not alive anymore, but under the Maccabim, who are waging war against the most powerful military forces in the world, who do not have the support of their own fellow Jewish citizens, who think they're fanatic and old-fashioned, and are simply not adapting to the times. They should be a progressive, second century BCE citizen, whatever, however they would refer to it then, like live in the first century and the like. And at some point, one could understand if the Chashmonaim would just say, what is the use of going on? Today we had a victory in a guerrilla warfare. What's going to be tomorrow? What's going to be the day after? Yes, yes, we'll be faithful to Hashem, but let's just go to the caves. Let's just go to the outlying areas where nobody's going to find us. Remember, Antiochus was not the KGB. I mean, if you wanted to be religious in some outlying area, you could probably get away with it. And one could understand if the Chashanam would just say, there's no way we can be successful. What is the use? So what is Hashem showing them in the miracle of the oil? Here, there's only one day of oil. There's no way it's going to last at all. And yet, what is the lesson? You light the light that you're able to light. You do what you can in a world of darkness. And then Hashem will bless your efforts beyond what you thought is possible. Can you imagine what that message is telling them? If that would have been at the end of the war, that would have been too late. This message is telling them, keep on going. Don't give up. Hashem will give you the strength that you need. And even if what you think is impossible, it is impossible for one day oil to last 8 days. Why even bother to light one day if tomorrow you're going to have to go to the Tamei oil? But the lesson is, the world is filled with darkness. There is the darkness of war and violence, and the darkness of ignorance and prejudice, and the darkness of apostasy and rejection of God, hatred of the Jewish people, the darkness of assimilation, the decadence of materialism. And one could easily say, what can I do? What light can I bring? What can my children do into the world? But Hanukkah says, you do what you can. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes over. That's the marvelous message of Hanukkah. That when you live in a world filled with all types of darkness, individual and collectively, and you feel helpless and immobile and unable to have a significant light, you still strive to light the little bit that you have. And then Hashem blesses our efforts beyond which we thought possible. This is a real important message. This is a message that we need to hear. and tell ourselves every day in Eretz Yisrael, really every day throughout the world, when we live in a world that is falling apart in so many ways, when we live in a world that our very physical survival is still an issue. The Holocaust didn't even solve that. For a few decades, the world felt sorry for us. No more. Now we are equivalent to the perpetrators of the Holocaust. But more importantly than even the physical is the idea that spiritually we can make a difference. And if we can make a difference, we have a responsibility to try to make that difference. So may HaKadosh Baruch Hu enable all of us to light the light in our lives that can banish the darkness. May it be a precursor for the Geula Shleima. Thank you.